When you hear that music, you should know by now it's time for Tech Plus. And with myself, Jan and Kane, discussing this week's biggest tech stories. Kane, hello, welcome back. How was your week?
Good week. It's getting cold.
It's getting really cold. We're dressed like Eskimos.
I know. I see Eskom's even released a statement now that's like, please, don't even put your inverters on when the power comes back on. So I...
Excuse me?
Yeah, they're like, please switch your...
The audacity. Why are we using those in the first place? Because they can't provide what we pay them for.
I know. They said, I believe, and I'll have to be fact-checked against it, but they said something like, if you try and use your inverter or charge your inverter between like 9 a.m. and 11:30 a.m., I think that's off-peak. That's fine. And then in the nighttime, I think 6 p.m. to like 9 p.m., they're like, you could cause a grid shutdown if you...
A grid shutdown.
But managing an inverter charging is much more challenging than... doing something like making sure your components are off when the power comes back on.
Because, I don't know about you, Kane, but I always plug in all my rechargeables as soon as the power comes back on. Because something inside me is telling me that you never know when it's going to go off and not come back on ever again.
I know. What if you're the guy that's like, no, I'm not going to charge my inverter when the power comes back. I'll do it in like an hour or so. And then it's another 2 hour load shedding as you...
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and I mean, have you ever had your own load shedding where all your rechargeables run out of battery because you didn't charge them before? Then they all shut down on you one by one during load shedding, and then you like double load shed it.
You're in debt. Things need to be charged.
Yeah, and then I feel so angry because I should have charged everything, you know. But I must say, they don't always give you enough time to charge everything as well, hey?
No.
Especially when they have those in the evening and then midnight there's another one coming because they don't like...
I think it very much also depends on the battery, you know what I mean? How long that takes to charge.
Some things take up to 6 hours to charge properly. Some torches and
some
stuff.
Batteries and things as well. I mean, even your bulbs, you know, your rechargeable globes.
They need to be on for how long?
If you get whacked by a 4 hour and then you have 2 hours of power and then another 4 hour, you have no chance.
Yeah.
There is no way.
It won't work.
It'll die in the first half an hour, you know. But something like a lithium-ion battery, they can be quite nice. I mean... We bought a pair of wireless headphones the other day that have a lithium battery in it, and it made sense to me how much it's changed over the years since we first started with wireless devices. You know, you used to have a headphone if you like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. If you dared have a wireless headphone that was Bluetooth, you're going to get a 5 hours, 6 hours worth of battery out of it. It's going to take you 2.5 hours to charge it. Nowadays you can go to the shop and you can buy a headset with a lithium ion battery and it will charge for 3 hours and it will last 40.
So battery life's really getting much better.
Yeah, so that's the good news,
thanks to lithium ion.
Yeah, and also lithium ion is very expensive to manufacture, and every solution to every battery related thing is always turning out to be lithium ion. So one has to wonder, well, How much infrastructure do we have to support all these people moving all these technologies and devices? Speaking of technologies and devices, for the price of $5,000, Samsung has released a new fridge. And what you could actually say is this is a 32-inch tablet that comes with a fridge. Because the fridge itself on the door has a 32-inch TV on it. And when I heard about this, the first thing that I thought was, what on earth do you do with a 32-inch TV attached to your fridge door?
Watch something while you're getting a midnight snack?
Especially when it's like close to 100,000 rand for the fridge. You know, there better be some Netflix subscription included in that.
It's not good if you're on a diet.
But there were actually some cool features of it. Like one person said that the way you can intuitively create recipes and have it be like your whole planning behind the fridge, it became more interesting. But no one would have said, I need a TV on my fridge. I mean,
because we spoke about fridge technology before. Wasn't there like a fridge that sent you photos of what's inside your fridge, remember? And then it tells you that you need milk or whatever.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
I remember that. Now I watch Netflix on your TV.
On your fridge.
On your fridge. On your fridge.
Imagine that, eh? And are you ready? We're talking. Also, we got Elon in the news again.
Of course, man.
So there's quite a few big developments on the Elon front. So let's get through them. The first one is Tesla has reportedly had a whistleblower release thousands of full self-driving safety complaints that they receive from customers. The data contains records of about over 2,400 self-acceleration issues and more than 1,500 braking problems. And a Tesla whistleblower leaked that 100 gigabytes of data to the German outlet Handelsblatt. And it contains thousands of customer complaints that raise serious concerns about the safety of Tesla's full driving systems. The complaints, which were reported across the US, Europe, Asia, and Spain from 2015 to March 2022, during this period, Hasselblad says Tesla customers reported over 2,400 self-acceleration issues and 1,500 braking problems, including 139 reports of unintentional emergency braking and 383 reports of phantom stops from false collision warnings.
So it just stops because it thinks it's going to crash.
No, you're pulling into your house and it's just like two cartwheels, who knows what happens. But that's
imagine.
And what actually, it's not that bad. Like, you talk about how many cars they've produced, how many cars have gone out to customers, and of those, there's about 3,900 complaints. It's not too crazy. What is crazy, though, is that they were able to also take a look at what Tesla's policy is when addressing these complaints. So some of the information they said was... they managed to find some of the policies described, which were written in German and translated to Google via Google Translate to English. So for each of the incidents, there are bullet points for the technical review. The employees who enter this information into the system regularly make it clear that the report is for internal use only. Each entry also contains the note in bold print that says that information, if at all, may only be passed on verbally to the customer. They also went on to say that do not copy and paste the report into an email, text message, or leave it in a voicemail to the customer. Vehicle data should also not be released without permission, which is pretty crazy. So what they're basically saying is whatever the incident report says, don't tell them about it verbally. Don't send it. Only tell them about it verbally. Don't send an SMS. Don't send a text message. Don't send an email. So that's a bit weird. It's a weird, and you have your employee safety policies to maintain, your legal stance and your legal leverage, but that's a bit hectic.
It
completely
is.
Completely do not pass any technical information through that has to do with the failure of our product. Something to think about. We'll definitely see some more information about that coming to light, and Elon Musk will surely have some sort of address about these issues, which we will see in the coming weeks. But that's not the only thing that's happening. That's just one of the specs on Elon Musk's windscreen. The other one is Ford EVs will start using Tesla charging ports starting next year, potentially suggesting quite a big collaboration or partnership possibly coming between Ford and Tesla, which is very, very interesting. And I think that one of the things that Elon Musk said, he made a statement, he says we don't want Tesla superchargers to be a walled garden, so they want to open that up to make sure that every other EV manufacturers can also use their power grid. I think it's a two-part strategy. I think part one is in order for electric vehicles to become the norm, there has to be existing infrastructure that's not on the responsibility of the manufacturer to implement. It's not the responsibility of car manufacturers today to make sure there's a garage where you can refuel petrol. That's happening on its own accord. That infrastructure is already set up. So for Tesla, I think if you can make sure that there's a substantial network of charging stations and you're also able to be one of the first people to implement those charging stations, you're going to earn good revenue from it and you're going to be well known. And that's how you could secure market share. Because what tells a company like Ford to produce less supercharging stations than we can just use Teslas? So also Tesla becomes more and more predominant in the EV units that are littered across America, and I'm sure soon will be globally. But it lowers their footprint. It reduces their ability or their desire or need to have to implement this infrastructure. So it's a clever way for Tesla to secure the infrastructure and at the same time help the EV market grow quickly, which I think is probably the strategy at play. And I quite like that. That's quite a good move.
I know there was a study done this week to see if South Africans are ready for EVs, electronic vehicles.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. Landmark Research assessed SAS readiness for electric vehicle EV transition. And this week marked a step forward in SAS' inevitable energy transition, which is great. Insightful research commissioned by IYF and funded by the British High Commission was handed over to the Department of Higher Education in a ceremony hosted by BMW South Africa in Johannesburg. The research assessed SA's current and potential readiness for the electronic or electric vehicle EV transition, and the findings of the study will influence future upskilling, upscaling and capacitating in the EV training sector. Do you think we are ready?
Are we ready for EVs? I'll tell you one thing. I didn't think we were ready for EVs a few months ago, but then I noticed even little old Neisner has a EV charger inside of
right?
the mall.
Yeah.
So,
and they're adding more. I saw that they're adding more.
Do I think a car that has a relatively low range, let's say between 350 and 550 kilometers on a single charge, do I think it has the ability to travel the coastline of South Africa? No. Do I think that a car like that could still be on the road if you're charging it at home and you're a stationary, your day-to-day routine is stationary? I think absolutely. I think absolutely. I mean, if you're charging your car at home overnight when you're when you're not getting load shed, it should be possible.
Yeah, so you won't stop next to the road and you run out of fuel, you'll run out of battery.
I think I don't know if I sent you the video, but I saw a video the other day where a guy was driving on the highway and a Tesla broke down. And he was driving on the highway and he pulled up behind this guy with his Tesla and he said, you know, what's wrong? He's like, no, I need to go to the garage to get petrol. The guy was like, it's a Tesla, why do you need petrol?
Yeah.
Because in the back of his car, in the boot, is a Honda inverter generator, which he puts petrol in, that starts the generator,
you must say
and
that
charges the car.
Oh, no, come on. It's ridiculous. Anyway, at this event in Joburg that we just spoke about, Kyle Dreyer, the sales manager of BMW, the event host, installed some interactivity into the event by providing attendees with the opportunity to test drive their hybrid and electric vehicles, offering guests just a taste and a glimpse into the future of the EV industry. So this research still has to happen to see if we are ready. So we'll look for the results. But the research will inform the country's next steps in a vital component of the global energy transition and influence the success of the low emission development strategy, which intends to reduce SA's carbon emissions to net zero by the year 2050.
Sure. That is quite a goal. That is quite a difficult
goal. If it's possible. Yeah.
I mean, we covered a story last week where we spoke about like a large oil refinery size carbon capture mechanism that you would install into the ocean, and as water passes through it, it takes the water up into it through electrolysis, separates the acid water from the basey water, and then recombines it, and as a result, carbon dioxide is captured and then pushed down into the bottom of the earth. That development costs a lot of money to build, and it takes like 100 million liters of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, which is the equivalent to, I think it was 12 cars driving for 1 year. To be carbon net zero, you really have to look at every single thing that is.
But we won't get there with our old coal-fired power stations anyway. They just don't want to let them go. I know it's not easy to let them go, but they won't let them go. They just want to keep them going and going. And we won't make our goals if we keep those coal power stations going. And also, the other thing is, I mean, we can't even switch over to digital TV on time.
Yeah.
So how will we, you know?
I it's a hell of a good question. But if you do turn off the coal generators and you do reduce your carbon footprint, how is South Africa going to survive?
Then we don't have lights. So, yeah, I don't think we'll reach that goal the way it's looking right now, unless there's some miracle.
That is very true. Food for thought.
Yeah, have you seen Andre's new book?
No, I haven't read it. I've seen he's released it.
Yeah, I still need to read it.
I think it'll be a good read.
Yeah.
Just to get some insight.
I think we must read it, but I mean, it's hard when you're so busy and you got to read like 400 pages.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
And you don't really want to read it at night when you go to bed. By your torch, read a book on load shedding. And I mean, it's enough already. I think we need some escapism when we go to bed. Who wants to read about load shedding and Andre the Rate at Eskom when you go to bed at night? I mean,
no, that's not a good idea. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. When we come back from the music break, we're going to take a look at Neuralink. We've had some developments there, some potentially some approved human trials for Neuralink. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about why Netflix might have truly done us in when they created their password sharing. And we're taking a look at some of the stats about what's happened since they've started implementing these anti-password sharing mechanisms.
Nice. And then after Netflix, can we talk about WhatsApp and what's new at WhatsApp? Have you seen the new features?
Let's do it.
Have you seen the new features?
I have not.
Okay, I'll tell you more after these. I feel like falling in love. I'm in the mood to roll something up. Tonight I'm rolling something up. I need some drink in my cup. Hey, I'm in the mood to pour something up. I'm in the mood to pour something up. I wanna go missing. I need a prescription. I wanna go higher. Can I sit on top of you? Ooh, la, 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 I wanna go where nobody's been. Have you ever had fun like this? We're gonna roll up tonight. Black lights, spaceships fly. Unapologetic when we pull up tonight.
Roll it up, roll it up.
Roll up tonight.
We're getting pulled up tonight.
Clean it up.
Get rough,
I love you,
for you.
I put my cup up. it up, cough it up. Welcome back to Tech Plus. If you just joined us, it's Jan and Kane with you. We do it every single week, same time, same place, talking about the week's biggest tech stories. Kane, hit me with your best shot.
Hey, I like the lyrics. The FDA will apparently let Elon Musk put a computer in a human's brain. So the question really is, who's going to be the first to go under the Neuralink knife? Yeah. Elon Musk's brain-computer interface company called Neuralink says it has received Food and Drug Administration approval to launch its first in-human clinical study. If this is true, it means that actual humans could be getting a device from Neuralink implanted into their heads. Yo. This news follows Elon Musk's November claim that Neuralink was about 6 months away from its first human trial, which suggests that it's rare that Musk promises something that actually comes true on time. So human trials of Neuralink mean a lot of things. I know that Elon Musk has said that he will in fact at some stage have Neuralink surgically implanted into his head so he can whisper to the computer.
It's going to malfunction.
The computer whisperer. But I think it could be some very advanced technology. I think its application in medical practices, I think could be one of the most influential, especially when you consider the ability to help someone see again,
wow,
or hear again, or smell again, you know, or help someone have the ability to negate Alzheimer's or dementia, help people be able to recall memories, interface with the computer in a way that doesn't need you to be pressing keys. When they did their studies on a monkey, what they were doing was they allowed him to have like a joystick. You know, those old arcade style joysticks where you like had four buttons and a joystick and you sat behind the arcade machine playing, you know, all these different games. So the monkey would have like a joystick like that, and he would basically play like a game of Pong where the ball would go to the one side of the ping pong court and then he would hit it back. And there were all these other kind of childlike games that he would play. And every time he succeeded at a level or succeeded at a particular action, they would give him a treat. And then they installed the Neuralink device into this monkey's brain while he had the joystick. And they started recording what was happening inside of his head while he was playing this game in order to redeem treats. Once they understood what actions he was doing in his own head to make the thing move, they disconnected the joystick. So the joystick no longer inputs into the arcade game. And that's how they trained the monkey to be able to use a Neuralink chip to interact with the computer without his hands.
Wow, that's fantastic. I mean, just now that you mention it, just this week, there was this guy who he can't walk. And he had some chip or something implanted into his spine. And now he just has to think about walking. And then it activates something in the chip, and then he can use his legs again.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's still like in the experimental phase.
That's unbelievable.
I think it was in Australia. I just want to, you know, get the article again. Obviously, it's lost now.
That's how it
works.
You know,
when you look for something, and yeah, it just vanishes. Like in my 1 million screenshots.
Well, here's something interesting in the meantime. Remember last week we spoke about interesting technology that allows something like a MacBook to be able to cool itself without actually having a physical fan, right? And how heat sinks works. That was some of our discussion on our previous show. So in this particular discussion, we're actually taking a look at a palm-sized PC that might contain the future of gadget cooling. So AirJet is essentially a non-mechanical fan that is inside of your computer or inside of a piece of hardware that has no moving parts, yet it blows air. And they do it through electromechanical systems. Basically, electromagnetism, in a good way, causes the air to pass through it faster than if that electromagnetism wasn't present. And you've seen those fans. I don't know if you've seen them, but they advertise them as room fans. They've got no blades on. There's just a hole in the middle.
That's it. Yeah, this round thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's
creepy.
That's that electromagnetical kind of system in place. And they've basically developed a very small version of it that you'll be able to put inside of a PC. So one thing about building laptops, which becomes obvious when you're trying to fit a lot of specs into it, is you're directly playing with heat. Because the more power the device consumes, the more heat it produces, but you want it to perform as best as possible. So you want it to use as much power as possible, but you also want it to be compact and small. And the less and the more compact it is and the smaller it is, the less available channels there are for air to freely move through the system. And you have manufacturing limitations for how thin a fan can be while still being effective.
Yeah.
You know? So this kind of system is essentially to replace something that is so small and so compact that needs to have air traveling through it but cannot because of its size. And what it does is you basically install it into the computer and it circulates air without actually having any physical parts. And it used to be an idea that was just presented at panels and things like that, but their first product actually goes live now. It's called the Zotac Z-Box. And it has this particular air jet in it. And it's a computer that this is the size of your palm. And it's a proper desktop computer. You've got an i5 processor in. You've got 16 gigs of RAM in there. You've got a mini GPU in there. It's all running very low wattage, but it's still very impressive that we've managed to actually go so far in technology that we can build a device that blows air around your computer that doesn't actually have any moving parts and just uses electricity to move air.
It's quite insane.
Phenomenal.
And I always say, what an interesting time we're living in. Also, here's that story. A paralyzed man has been able to walk simply by thinking about it, thanks to electronic brain implants, a medical first that he says has changed his life. It's a Dutch man, 40 years old, Gert-Jan Oskam. He was paralyzed in a cycling accident 12 years ago, and now the electronic implants wirelessly transmit his thoughts to his legs and feet via a second implant on his spine. The system is still at an experimental stage, but a leading UK spinal charity called it very encouraging.
Wow.
So he's wearing this almost like a headset.
Wow.
And then he thinks about walking and then he can walk.
Wow.
How insane, eh?
It makes you realize that when Elon Musk said, you know, if we don't start getting Neuralink to the forefront of the commercial frontier, then everything they've done is for nothing, because everything else is growing so fast in those fields.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very true, especially in medical. Neuralink is great for I can answer phone calls myself, but when you can give someone sight or make them walk again, dealing with a completely different kind of animal, you know, of potential. So I'm very excited to see this progress and nervous.
And nervous. It's experimental, so anything can happen.
Someone hacked my legs.
Oh no.
You know what I mean. You don't know
I
what
didn't
could
even
happen.
Think about it. Wow. Oh, that's insane. Oh no.
So next up, let's take a look at something else.
Netflix.
Netflix, indeed. We are taking a look at Netflix. Password sharing.
Yeah.
You don't have a Netflix account anymore, hey?
No, I'm sharing it.
Okay.
With somebody, so I will be affected.
Okay.
Because it's her account.
So this is what are some expert opinions on this Netflix thing that's happening now. So Netflix might actually ruin password sharing for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think password sharing is a usual thing. And even the previous CEO of Netflix actually went out and said that password sharing is something that everyone's going to have to just get used to, because people are always going to share their password. I mean, you know, that's kind of... It's kind of intuitive to think that people won't share their password. It means they can save money. It's also a consumer-related benefit as well. You want to feel like you can save money. You know, it's mechanical leverage for saving money. But what they've gone out to say now is that Netflix, when they introduced their tier, and specifically when they did it in Canada and in some of the other regions, they had a lot of sell-off. They lost almost about 1 million users when they said password sharing has to become a thing. And they seem quite steadfast that they're still going to continue with it. They've made themselves prepared for subscriber layoffs. You know, guys just absolutely canceling their subscription right away. I think in the back of their mind, they're hoping that people drop down to the $8 a month tier. This is just global price.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, Netflix has this thing called average viewer value, right? Concurrent viewer value. It's like the value of one retained user, which is about $16 a month. So when you say no more password sharing, and that user then says, okay, well, I'm just going to pay for the $8 one. Now your average active user value has it just halved.
Mm.
So they're playing with fire. And the reason that I say it's concerning for the greater scheme of things, because Disney Plus, Hulu, Amazon Prime, all your streaming platforms, even, you know, HBO and all these different streaming giants, they're just watching Netflix.
Mm.
They're just watching. They're like, number one, how does Americans and the rest of the world react to this password sharing logic? Right. They're also going to look at what happens to their revenue. Has it gone up? Has it gone down? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it worthwhile? Isn't it? And unfortunately, based on the way consumers react to what Netflix is doing with password sharing, you're kind of paving the road for it to become standardized, to become normalized, to not allow someone to share their password, which in some ways I agree with, in some ways I don't. I think for lower income regions, no one has $100 to pay for everyone in the house to watch their own Netflix.
Mm.
I mean, that's crazy. That's now we're back with DSTV prices.
I was gonna say, you now know? It's back to the old DSTV thing.
And that's a big enough problem as it is. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of competition, and I definitely think there's gonna be always a streaming platform that exists that allows you to password share. It'll actually be a feature.
Yeah.
It won't be like this thing that you can do, but it's like, you know, don't do it. It's just gonna be like, as long as you have your subscription, share it with as many people as you want. And carry on.
But now Netflix obviously becoming greedy, and this could be their downfall.
It could. It 100% could, but also when it was kind of teetering towards the end of the pandemic, Netflix, and the pandemic lasted, what, a year?
Two years.
Mm. So they would have had 2 years worth of pandemic growth, which would have been substantial. People kind of just giving up and being like, fine, we will sit at home then, you know, and just watch Netflix. So their subscriber growth would have picked up significantly. And then they would have started notice the pandemic starting to subside. And people were just like, well, you know, I'm allowed to go outside again. I'm not going to have my Netflix subscription. So they would have started seeing user drop. Also user paying user aggregation, meaning if I pay for an account and you pay for an account, we just decide, okay, you pay for the Netflix account and I'll pay for the Amazon Prime account. We both share.
That's it.
So users consolidated their accounts.
Yeah.
And I think when they started doing that, Netflix realized they're either going to have a call with their investors where they sell their subscriber loss, or they force password sharing implementation now, and then they can tell investors that the only reason they're losing customers is because some people don't like the idea of password sharing, which is okay because we don't want guys that don't pay anyway. And I think we're seeing some of the investor-related strategies going on there from them.
So, like you said, the other streaming giants are watching. I mean, they could, you know, it's kind of like an experiment for them to see also how it goes. And whether it's successful or not, they can see, and then they could follow or say, oh, hell no, look what happened to Netflix, so we can't do that.
Yeah, Netflix is like paving the way. They're going to take the brunt of it, and then once people are okay with whatever they do, then everyone else is going to do it, especially if it's like financially feasible for the operator, you know? So that was very interesting. OpenAI, right, who's run by CEO Sam Altman, right, suddenly is more open to AI regulation in Europe. Last week we spoke about the fact that Elon Musk felt that he was nervous that Sam Altman wasn't concerned enough about the potential havoc that AI could cause.
Mm.
And as a result, that's when Elon Musk started funding OpenAI and actually doing his investments into this various technology in hopes that someone would come along that does have those particular values. Now, as of the other day, Sam Altman said that we will try to comply with EU regulation, but if we can't comply, we'll just cease operating. And the other day, he came back and tweeted, he's just had a very productive week of conversations in Europe about how to best regulate AI. He's very excited to continue to operate in Europe and, of course, have no plans to leave. It's kind of like a rebuttal on it. He was kind of, at first he was saying, no, I like the AI, it's great. If you don't want it here, we just leave. You know, that was his kind of stance on it. And now he's kind of saying, okay, well, maybe we have to allow it to be regulated. But I don't necessarily understand or think that the way they're addressing AI at the moment in terms of plausible actions that they can take. One of the actions, for example, that I don't really understand is limiting its progress. So it's saying AI should only be able to progress at such and such a speed whereby we can keep up with it. But you should never tater breakthroughs. If you're building something that's like grassroots influential, you should never be working under an environment where you know you can do a little bit more to improve, but you can't do too much.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's not a good way to work. So there's a lot of evolving to do. We also don't want to destroy what is humanity in a nutshell. You know, the quality of watching a movie that was written by a team of 15 different writers, you know, all around the table, passing ideas around.
Years of experience,
yeah. Knowing how the viewer's reacting and really kind of concocting this amazing recipe of drama and action and suspense and plot twists. And there's an artistry to it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? There's an artistry to it. And that's why we see now one of Marvel's latest shows, Thunderbolts. It's about like the anti-heroes of Marvel. That's also been postponed now because of the writer's strikes. Writer's strikes going on all over, even for Stranger Things, where the writers are striking, all 11,000 of them that kind of run the whole of Hollywood, you know, because those writers are writing the series and the movies and they're like the heart and soul of the drama of these shows. And they're on strike because they don't feel like they're being paid adequately.
Oh.
And I would have to agree. What would the movie be without the substance, without the connection between the characters, without who the character is? You know, no one goes to a cinema to watch five mannequins walk around a room. You know, that's not very exciting.
You're right, yeah. Yeah, so, it's like lots and lots of layers going into a successful movie.
So the regulation has to allow AI to grow.
It's like the foundation.
It has to allow people not to lose money.
Yeah.
And it has to be a tool in the toolbox of the person who's pursuing that career. It cannot be in a replacement to him. You know what I mean? It can't be a toolbox that cannot be accessed by the real professionals. You can't have something that's so good that it automates your work better than you can, and you can't even interact with it. You can't even put a piece of you into that.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we have to go. And it's a long road, but an exciting one, because the breakthroughs are real. Humanity hasn't had a technological breakthrough of this status before. Mm. Anything that would be akin to this would be being able to say, I can duplicate people. I can make people who work. That's what AI is. It's a conscious entity that can read, write, understand, interpretate, digest, summarize, conclude, and communicate with you. It's like that. To create someone who could be an expert at one thing and another one at another thing and make them work together, and that's what it is. It's a breakthrough.
There's mountains on Mars and riverbeds too. Infinite stars, and there's me and you. There's nothing he's doing, just keep on moving and be here now with me. Won't you be here now with me? Dance, 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 let it be. Dance all over me. Come on and dance, 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 let it be. You're perfectly sick, you got that mover's disease. It's a one-stop shop for that heart swept up. Be here now with me. Won't you be here now with me? Tonight with me. Tonight with me. Won't you cut it up and dance all over me? Tonight with me. Tonight with me. Won't you cut it up? All over me. Cut it up and dance all over me.
all over me. Come on and dance, dance, dance. Let it be, be, be. Dance all over me.
You know what freaked me out this week, and
what?
That was also AI, was there's this channel, actually a few, on TikTok, and they take deceased celebrities like Princess Diana, Michael Jackson, and make them alive again and let them talk and tell their story of how they died. And that was pretty creepy, seeing Princess Diana telling her story of how she died in the car accident. It's her voice, very similar to her voice. Her mannerisms, the way she, you know, kind of looks down while she's busy talking, it kind of freaked me out. I could still see it wasn't really her, but, I mean, I can't imagine what it must feel like for her family if they watch that.
Horrible.
Seeing that, hearing her voice and telling a story that, you know, she can't tell because she's not here with us anymore.
No, it
freaked me out.
I
Michael
really don't
Jackson
like that at
well.
All because it's not real.
No,
it's completely fake.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just and it's the AI's interpretation of what you would say to this.
Yeah, it's but like, it's creepy, man.
It's not cool. Yeah.
I think that's the main thing. It's creepy, but you know what's not creepy?
What?
It's the new features on WhatsApp.
Okay.
Well, I suppose it depends on what you do with them, because one of them is locked messages. Where you can now kind of, it's almost like a secret folder where you can lock chats.
Okay.
My WhatsApp's not showing that yet. I don't know about you.
So after you lock the chat, does it just stay locked?
Yeah, it goes into this folder, and then any new messages, it also comes into that folder.
Oh, that's quite good.
So it doesn't show that there's a new message. You have to go into the folder, I think, to see it. You can't see it as a pop-up or whatever.
Yeah, that's very good if someone's sending you passwords.
It's like a private...
Yeah.
Or if somebody's cheating, that's the problem.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the new edit feature. Also, I had an update early this morning on WhatsApp. I haven't checked yet. But edit, of course, so you highlight the text. Let's say you made a spelling mistake, like the one that Mark Zuckerberg posted as an example, where you say... I wanted to say best of luck and you wrote beast of luck. So now you want to take out the A. So all you do is you highlight it and you go to edit, quickly take it out, fix your spelling mistake, and then save it again. I think the other person can see you edited it and see the edit history like you can on Facebook if you edited something.
Yes.
But I think you only have 15 minutes to do so, to fix that mistake. Otherwise, so then it expires and you can't edit it anymore. Then it's like stuck.
WhatsApp loves their message timers, eh?
Yeah, that's the other thing. But, I mean, can you imagine in court, you know, if somebody said something and they quickly edited it after like 15 minutes and now it's saying something different? You know, this could get very interesting.
Yeah, no, 100%. No,
like,
for sure.
I think people won't necessarily just use it to fix spelling mistakes, if you know what I'm saying.
No, there's going to be some...
I didn't say that. No, you did. Look, view edit history. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, there's going to be some finger pointing.
It's going to make it really interesting.
For sure.
But I mean, it's nice. It's nice because, I mean, how many times did you type really quickly and then you make a spelling mistake or predictive text made it for you?
Too often.
Yeah. And remember, it's never duck. I didn't write duck. Because it always corrects that word if you use that power word. It always changes it to duck. So what the duck? But what have you got on WhatsApp for us?
So we won't talk WhatsApp. WhatsApp's coming out with a username that I can say.
Yeah,
looks
that's
like everyone will be getting a username on WhatsApp, which is
okay.
Yeah, so you'll have
that's
something.
Interesting. We don't have those already.
No, so like you have a username on Twitter.
Yeah,
I think you might have a username
on
WhatsApp.
You go according to your phone number.
Yeah,
on WhatsApp.
So you'll be able
that's
to
nice.
Pick a unique name
I
for
like
your
it.
Account, and then you can give someone that account. So it can be like
that's nice.
You
yeah.
know, best flowers, Neisner. And that could be a whole username.
Instead of being stuck and linked to your cell phone number.
Yeah, exactly. So someone can find you by your username.
Okay, if you're a business, that's nice.
Yeah,
if you're
an individual, Express Nasno or something.
If you're an individual...
No, there had to be some sort of enterprise behind it. Otherwise, it's just a cool username that your friends might know you by.
That's it. Good one.
So here's something very interesting. And I know some people might find this very interesting. A new saber tooth reveals unprecedented impact of Earth's largest ever extinction. So a new species of saber tooth predator has been discovered here in South Africa.
What?
So in the middle of the largest extinction of all time, the new carnivore likely took advantage of this instability to become a top predator before it was too wiped out. So millions of years ago, 250 million average years ago to be exact, there was a large mass extinction that was happening at that time. And now they've found evidence to suggest that when that extinction was beginning and starting, the saber-toothed tigers migrated from Russia almost 11,000 kilometers down to Africa.
Wow.
And actually became a top predator there before going extinct themselves in that area. So that's very interesting, and we found that right here in the Karoo Basin of South Africa just a few days ago, and that is mighty cool.
Wow.
Right here in South Africa. It's 250 million years old, and we found it here in sunny South Africa.
That's crazy. You know what else is crazy?
What's crazy?
Did you see what they want to do in Dubai?
No. Oh, the city.
Yes. They want to build a replica of the moon, as in the actual moon, the size and everything. It will shine and everything.
No, why?
Billions.
Why?
I don't know.
Just going to sit there on the side moon. Of the Earth.
Yeah, it's going to be a second moon, but the same size and everything.
Is it going to sit on the Earth, or are they going to put it in the sky?
No, it's going to be like on the ground.
It's going to be on the ground. Why?
It's going to be a landmark, you know.
A landmark, yeah. Like the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, I suppose.
Oh, why? My word.
Yeah, so I mean, how much light would you need to light it up?
I don't know. Why do you need the moon on Earth? It's such a big thing. There's nothing on it.
Yeah. Listen, there's something else. We're running out of time, but there's something else that happened recently. I don't know if you heard. On Facebook, there was a bug. And if you browsed somebody's profile, it would automatically send them a friend request.
What?
Yeah, it was a bug recently. So I was thinking, you know, imagine like you just went to stalk your ex on Facebook. And
like, start sending Facebook
requests. And then they get a friend request from you. What does he want? So I think that made it pretty awkward for some people. And the other thing is, also this week, there was a bug on Twitter where people's messages came back to haunt them. Thousands of deleted messages from the past came back on Twitter. Just all of a sudden just appeared again.
As tweets or direct messages or what?
As tweets again.
As tweets?
Yes.
So they just came back online?
Yes.
Started creating havoc?
Yeah.
That's alarming.
Yeah, but it looks like it's for the people who used a third-party app to send those tweets. So maybe it has something to do with that. They didn't use Twitter directly. So they used like a third party, like what, Hootsuite or whatever.
That is so interesting. To send those tweets.
So what? I think that could make life difficult for you. If you said something really bad and now it's coming back to haunt you.
Yeah, and you thought it was safety deleted.
Yeah,
you know?
But now this also raised questions about the safety of data at Twitter. Because where did they get it? It was deleted.
Yeah.
Where is it coming from now? Where was it stored, you know?
Yeah, why was it deleted but still stored and still able to come back again?
Yeah. So that raised some questions. But I think they fixed the bug. I think.
Speaking of bugs. So there was an AI-generated image of the Pentagon on fire. Like an explosion had gone off on the Pentagon. It was all AI image-generated. And then it was shared onto Twitter and other social media platforms, and it went absolutely viral. Very well-recognized and approved or certified Twitter blue-tick users.
Oh, my word.
Started retweeting and sharing this news about the Pentagon up
chaos.
In flames. And it was just an AI-generated image.
Whoa.
And that can also show you the dangers that when it's becoming so difficult to disseminate human creation, real life from computer creation.
That's what we said. In a few shows now, it's becoming more and more difficult to distinguish between the two. You don't know what's real anymore. That's a bit of a worry.
No, especially when you start getting into different technologies like projectors, and you could go really crazy at it, you know, you can create some crazy things. But is that the end for today?
Yes. You know, I'm going to try from this week to end off every show with an interesting fact.
Okay.
And I also want to try like doing app reviews if I have time.
You know,
and tell people what it's like. So it's not necessarily an app, but it's a website powered by an app called loadshed.theoutlier.co.za. That's OUTLIER. It collects all the data from Eskom's push, and you can see up to the minute how much load shedding we've had this year so far. Up to the minute and the hours and the days and the months of how, you know, how long we've had load shedding.
Wow.
So it's like it's a data collection service. And it gives you the stats. It's like big on the screen. But I thought that was quite interesting. So loadshed.theoutlier.co.za, or just, I'm sure you can Google the outlier as well. It's actually powered by Eskom's push. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same guys.
Maybe.
Or they're just working together. And then lastly, here's something interesting. And I wonder if you knew this. Do you know the software Sea Cleaner? Some people refer to it as CC Cleaner.
Yes, I
know. But it's actually Sea Cleaner. Do you have it?
I do.
Okay, do you use it?
I've used it before, but not frequently.
Okay, because some people say it messes up your registry if you use the registry cleaner on it. It could possibly mess up your registry.
Yeah.
And you can set programs to start up and everything. It's quite a handy tool.
Yes.
Anyway, do you know what the C stands for in C Cleaner?
Computer Cleaner.
Nope. I thought so for years. Well, in fact, I called it CC Cleaner, but it's C Cleaner. And it's not for computer. It stands for crap. Crap cleaner. I kid you not. You can Google it right now. Yeah. So obviously,
brilliant.
So obviously it's known as Sea Cleaner, but it actually means crap cleaner because it clears the crap off your computer.
That is actually a great name. It reminds me of a name of this other phone that's coming out now. It's called the Nothing Phone.
What?
The
what?
Nothing Phone.
What?
It's just nothing.
So what's on it?
Nothing Phone X. And it's a great phone, but their whole name is a marketing technique.
That's pretty cool.
It's nothing.
Actually,
it's the nothing phone.
So, what phone do you use?
Nothing. It's going to create some confusion.
It's going to.
But I like the marketing.
It's the nothing phone. Very funky marketing. I wonder what the logo looks like. I must Google it. You can't see the logo.
It's nothing there.
It's white on white, probably. Kane, that was another very interesting show. Thank you so much as always, and I hope you're going to enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Same to you. Definitely going to. And thanks for all of our listeners for listening in.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
See you next week.
See you then. Cheers.
Bye-bye.